as Don mentioned in the opening prayer, sin is what we want to talk about today. We deal with that 7 days a week as far as our personal lives, but it's also a topic that the Bible has a lot to say about. You don't get very far past creation until we read about sin. And then you continue to read about sin as far as God's people, the patriarchs. They were involved with sin at various times, the nation of Israel. Sin was a big part of their life at various times. Sin finally took them into Egyptian bondage. You have sin there, and then the Assyrian captivity, the Babylonian captivity. They get out, still sin. Jesus comes into the world that was filled with sinners. In fact, remember, for he said, for the Son of Man came to seek and save that which was lost. The word lost is just another name for the sinners, the unsaved. And then finally, you continue to read through the book of the books of the New Testament, and then you get to the point where God's people are finally in heaven, saved, and sin-free. But it is a big part of life. Lesson 15, want to make sure that everybody does have a copy of the material. Anybody need the lesson? Okay. He says in that first paragraph, the great purpose for which Jesus Christ came to earth was to save man from sin. And that is exactly right. If you remember Keith Beeson, I remember one of the things that he described as he and another fellow were doing some mission work in Africa. They needed to describe in very simple language information about the Bible. And when they were translating that information from English into the native language, they came up with the idea as far as sin, because they didn't have a real good concept of sin. They said, sin is bad. And that's pretty simple, but I mean, that's what we're saying when we talk about sin. The writer continues by saying, unless we grasp this important fact, our whole belief in him is vain. And that's right. A lot of people think that Jesus is a great character, and yes, we should love him, and he taught many good things. But if we don't realize that Christ is a solution for sin, and that sin is man's greatest problem, then in the end, nothing is really going to matter. Thus, in the next lesson, we want to give some consideration. We want to study how we may receive the forgiveness of sins through Christ. But before we can figure out the remedy, we want to make sure that we understand the problem. Hence, today's study is about sin. All right, let's think about sin. The Bible teaches, and 1 John 3:4 is translated a little differently in our translations, but the ASV will reflect the point here as well as some others. John teaches that sin is what? It is the transgression. It is the breaking of the law. And John uses the present tense in 1 John chapter 3 and verse 4. He says, the one who's doing sin. Now, again, if you put that in terms of, maybe a criminal activity, you know, one crime is enough to, send you off to prison, isn't it? How many people you have to kill before they say you're a murderer? Well, just one. And sin operates in the same kind of way. You just need to go ahead and commit one sin to be guilty of sin. But here, as John talks about it in 1 John chapter 3, verse 4, he uses the present tense to say that the person who is continually involved with sin, that person is a transgressor, that person is involved with lawless behavior. We see that same kind of thing today. Ferguson, Missouri, the rioting down there, we see some of that information, and on TV, they say, what kind of behavior is it? It is lawless. Don't we hear that word? It's lawlessness. It's lawless behavior out there. People are not following the law. Well, we understand that in the secular realm. There is a certain standard. There is a code of conduct, if you will. People are to restrain themselves. And if they choose not to do that, they choose to go out and break into businesses. They choose to, put cars on fire, those kinds of things. That's lawless behavior. Well, the same thing is true in the spiritual realm. God says, I have a standard. It's a standard revealed in my word. And if you don't adhere to the standard, whether that's one time or whether that is an ongoing basis, then what's true for you? You are lawless. Well, that's a concept, I think, that a lot of people have some difficulty with, because they think, well, I'm not out there torching cars. I'm not out there breaking into buildings. I'm not out there beating up people. I have never murdered anybody in my life. How can I possibly be a lawless person? I'm a good person. Well, will goodness get us to heaven? That's not the way that God has designed the system, but a lot of people believe that. Well, I don't do this and I don't do that, and it's almost a negative form of righteousness. Finishing up with what we have here in bold in the first page, he says, while crime is a transgression of the law of the land and vice is the transgression of the moral standards and customs of the people, sin, as I just went through, is the transgression of the law of God. The word literally means to miss the mark. If you go back and you look at the word, you find that archers were sometimes using this particular sin, they would aim at their target, they'd aim at their mark, and the arrow wouldn't hit the target, or it would be off from the place that they were trying to hit it. And that's what we're talking about when we deal with sin. God has the mark. And he says, you need to be on the mark. And if you miss the mark, you're lawless. Well, as we go through life, how easy is it to miss God's mark? Is it easy or hard? It's pretty easy. I mean, we'll deal with probably a little later, Romans chapter 3, where Paul said that everybody misses the mark. Then as we think about sin, he says, many sins are moral in nature. This is an area that bothers some people. Other people are not so much bothered by it. But there are some people who they want to live in the right way, they want to do the right thing, and they try to have a good sense of morality about them. And we probably see some people like that in life. They want to be a good citizen in the community, they want to be a good person at work, and we would say that that individual, we've had some neighbors like that over the years, very fine people, morally speaking, but God's law was still a law that they were not adhering to in a flawless way. When he talks about morality, and some of these we see in our country, some not, idolatry. We typically do not find, probably in the people that we associate with, too many people in our country who will bow down to an idol. You know, they've got a statue up there in the mantle, or they've got a statue out there in the front yard, and that is their God. There are some instances of that, because we are, in some respects, a pluralistic society. But we probably see the other kinds of things it talks about. Adultery, drunkenness. You do have some specific moral sins mentioned in the Bible. Now, people sometimes, especially in our day and time, they'll say, well, you know, hey, I do this, and I don't feel very bad about that. I'll tell you a story. Two Christians. There was, in the community, a little ways out from where these Christians worship, a casino. And the two Christians ended up at the same casino to gamble on the same day. Cross paths. And one brother said to the other brother, hey, I'm a little short of money. Can you give me some gambling money? And I just, over the years, I've thought about that at various times. You know, bad enough to go and be involved in some of that stuff. But hey, I'm here. I don't have enough money to go ahead and do what I want to do. Could you give me a loan? But there are some people who get sucked into various things. Sometimes they're not a strong Christian. Sometimes they've not thought some things through. Sometimes it's a matter of weakness for some of the things that are specifically mentioned. And then sometimes, too, for some of the things that are implied. When you look at things that are implied, I guess, or principles that we would need to use, what else might you include besides gambling in the moral realm? Can you come up with anything else? Glenda?
I was thinking about when I went to a Box Basics in Battle Creek the other day, and it was at a casino. And I arrived there around 11, 10 a.m. It was around 9:30 in the morning, whatever. Anyways, in the casino I looked, and there was just lots of, and most of them were elderly people up there early gambling. So I think of things that they could be, other things they could be doing with their time, other than gambling.
Yeah, it is. When you look at seniors, there have been some casinos that have figured out that's going to be a pretty good income stream. So they've actually gotten some decent buses that will actually go out to the nursing home or go out into a central spot where seniors, you know, may not be. They can walk, you know, maybe half a block, something like that. So there's a pooling place, if you will, where they can go down there and sit for a little while, and the bus will run them up to the casino, cash their check, and those kinds of things. So it's kind of a sad way of life if that's all that you have to look forward to or do in your retirement years. But there's a lot of that that takes place in the U.S. Don?
Gambling. Buying a lottery tickets, gambling.
When you look, when you think about gambling, you want to make sure that you're working with the definition. And if you have a good definition, then you can take the various act, whether that's betting on the ponies, whether it's buying a lottery ticket, or if it's a school raffle and some other things. I've heard over the years gambling applied to some things which I think that they were probably being a little too broad in the definition. If I were going to preach this, I'd go back and look at all the various points and probably give you about a 6-point definition, which off the cuff, I don't have all 6 points handy. But to give you a couple of things that you can kind of walk away with from the class, when you think about gambling, in a sense, there are at least a couple of things that you're trying to accomplish if you're involved with it. Anybody want to take a shot at what one of those things might be?
Coming out ahead. Oh, sorry.
Well, okay, well, we got you first, then we'll take Ray's thought.
Coming out ahead.
Okay, and not only are you trying to come out ahead, but if I'm gambling and you're involved in the process as well, the very nature of gambling means who wants to win? Me, whether that's you or me. And by me winning, what's that mean for you? You lost. And then that becomes a difficulty because when you think about the golden rule that Jesus gave, you know, Matthew 7, I believe it's verse 12, it says treat people, this is summing up, treat people as you want to be treated. Well, how do I want you to be treated? I want you to lose. But is that how I want to be treated?
No.
Well, I want to win. So just from that single teaching by Jesus, you have there one of the things that's true for gambling.
I've mentioned the gambling thing, the same type of thing. But you mentioned a couple other things about maybe it's not totally gambling, because I've known people that does that, but they set aside a certain amount for recreation.
Yes.
And whether they win or lose, it doesn't bother
them. Right. For them, that is, you know, they're not going to go to the movies, they're not going to go bowl, they're going to gamble, and that is their entertainment money. And again, this is one of those topics where you have a lot of things that factor into it. So I try to be careful rather than just paint that with a broad brush and say, well, let's go ahead and, you know, just stamp this on that or stamp that on that. But we'll say a little bit more about that in a second. I'll take Don's hand and then Bonnie will go back to you.
We use the term a lot of times. I want to take a chance on that. Mm-hmm. I want to take a gamble on that, investing or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody's winning and losing in that respect too. If you look at where the, if you lose, where the money's going to go to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a casino, it may not be a good place for the, for you to lose your money, even though you're recreation. Right. If you buy a raffle ticket to help your kids at school, that's gambling, but that's a good cause. So
yeah.
You're donating.
There again, that would be another factor that you would want to look at as far as where the fund's going. And I think it's fair to say that as you look at the Bible as a whole, and as you look at individuals, if they are learning and growing, as Peter talked about, do you think as the years go by, the conscience becomes a little better? It becomes more attuned to spiritual things? I can think of a situation, lady, the kids are now in their 60s, the lady, she's probably close to 80, and for their formative years, they went to the beach. And the parents didn't think anything about, you know, what's sometimes referred to as mixed swimming. Well, as the years went by and their kids became grown and their kids had kids, and she kind of looked at the, you know, the way the family developed. And it's a good family in many ways. You know, several of the kids are Christians, and, you know, things have worked out generally pretty well there. But I still remember this lady who's now close to 80 saying, I think that was a mistake. Going back, you know, the clothing that we were wearing, you know, some of the sights that we were exposed to, were we to do that again with the knowledge that I have now, we wouldn't have done it. And as the years go by and the conscience becomes more sensitive and people pick up more information, sometimes they will go ahead and say, we're no longer going to be involved with that activity. And when you talk about, for example, growing up, I always liked the things like cakewalks. And other things, raffle tickets. I've always enjoyed that. You know, I've said publicly, if there was a vice that I'd really like to pursue, I'd love to gamble. But, you know, for me, I just, you know, I know that that could be a weakness. And I think you've got a lot of biblical passages that relate to it. So I just try to stay away from that, you know, just like fire. You know, you just stay away from the burning house. So in this particular case, I think as the conscience goes by, at least for me, that was one of the things that as the years went by, I thought, you know, if we're dealing with a raffle ticket, whether you're at, you know, the demolition derby over there in South Bend, they'll sell raffle tickets and some other things, or for school, that's even something that I want to avoid. So as people go by, as the years go by, sometimes the conscience becomes more and more sensitive. You know, here's a buck for the school, or, you know, just, you know, give the ticket to somebody else, but here's my contribution, and they will avoid that. But when you begin to break it down, you can, I think, see some distinctions between some of the activities. And maybe there'd be some that would disagree, but I would not put the purchase of a lottery ticket, you know, spend a dollar and have a chance to win, you know, $100,000 in the same category as somebody that's taking, buying a ticket of 100 raffle tickets and somebody's going to walk home with $100. To me, that you'll really seem to come out with greed in the first one and not so much in the second one. And that doesn't say that both are right, or one of the two is right. But still, there does seem to me to be some distinction as far as the things that you're involved with there. If you go back to what we're talking about with Steve, you've got that desire to gain. You mentioned what Don had talked about. You may be fueling an institution that we certainly would not agree with what's being done there. You've got the example as well, a public example. Somebody sees you involved with that kind of activity. And then what Don had mentioned too, somebody comes along and says, well, hey, look, we sometimes talk about making investment that's a gamble. Well, I'm not sure that we use the word gamble very well in that kind of circumstance. We're taking a risk, perhaps. But, you know, we're actually investing something. A person says, here, stock in the company, or you're going to be a partner in the company, and maybe because it's a startup, there is some risk there. But you actually have something tangible. You have something, perhaps, maybe there's some equipment that's involved. And your money that you're putting down, you actually, maybe it's not going to be useful if the business folds up. Nobody else may want the equipment. But still, you have something. If you purchase stock, it may be a risky stock, but still, they're saying you have some shares in the company. When you buy that lottery ticket, what do you have? Yeah, and probably a piece of paper that's going to be absolutely worth junk. There is no value to that in contrast to that. So that would be another thing when people talk about this is a gamble, this is a risk. Well, do you actually have some kind of investment rather than you're just throwing money at the wall and hoping that something is going to stick? So again, there's a lot of information there, but it is a moral issue, and it does create some big problems in society. I've mentioned in some sermons in the past, and this is true, you can find it easily on the net and some other places, but when you think about Narcotics Anonymous, you think about Alcoholic Anonymous. Is it Alcoholics? Okay, it's AA, we all know what it means, however you pronounce the first one, whether there's an S on it or not. But anyway, we've got that. And then you've also got some other anonymous organizations. One is Gamblers Anonymous. It is such a big issue. There have been women in the Vegas area that have had to go into prostitution because their husbands got so far in debt. And, you know, we shouldn't want to be involved with that kind of thing or to support that kind of industry. So that's just kind of a quick summation there. Anybody else want to?
Bonnie.
I'm sorry, Bonnie, we lost your thought.
There's a lot of families and children that suffer.
Sure. Yeah, and again, going back to what Ray said, there would be some people who would say, I make sure that the mortgage is paid and we've got food on the table and everything is taken care of, and this is going to be recreational for me. Well, again, I would not put that in the same category as the type of individual that you just mentioned, but again, is that the most wholesome form of recreation? And it's kind of like the lady with the beach. I think you can have a person who's a preacher get up and just, berate people from the pulpit, but I'm not sure that that's the best way to go. You really don't find that in the Bible. Teach people. You know, let's sit down and see what it means to live the Christian life. Let's learn some of those principles that allow us to take these moral choices and decisions, plug them into Scripture, and see what we come out with. Is that the best way? Is that the most wholesome way to live the Christian life? And there are some cases where you've got to sit down and be, fairly forceful with people. But again, teaching people generally seems to be the best way to help them mature.
Do you consider something like the Publishing Clearinghouse give you life as
gambling? I do not. Now that might be, Teresa's actually entered that a few times, I probably have a few times over the years, and the distinction there that I would make is that I have no money invested in that. It is an opportunity, and if you find someone who objects to that, then for consistency's sake, if you're down at Menards and they're giving away a free car or, a free car wash at the school, and you sign up for that, guess what? It's the same thing. Now, you might say $10 million is not the same as a free car wash. Well, okay, I'll grant you that. But still, in principle, there is a drawing. There is a prize that's being offered, and the only thing they want from you is your contact information, which they're probably going to try to sell you some stuff. But if you want to enter that, then again, there is no money being thrown at it. There is no risk to you. You have no chance of losing something that you've invested. So, good question, but I come down on that side of that.
There's a very small distinction there, though. You are paying for a stand.
Well, not if you do it online.
You do it online now?
Yeah. And the same deal, if you're at Menards and you're registering there. Now, again, if you want to go ahead and kind of grade that and say, okay, you're having to invest a stamp, you're having to invest an envelope, those kinds of things, then you could make that argument.
I'm just saying, I'm sure. Also recently, anyway. I mean, where do you draw the line? But I mean,
right.
There's a fine line that I think sometimes some people try to walk, and I think that fine line people need to think about. For example, using the word recreation, you can use that for every single sinner.
Absolutely. Yeah, a person might say, I use drugs recreationally, I smoke recreationally, I fornicate on a recreational basis. That's right. So you do want to be mindful of that as well. But when we think about drawings, and that's why I mentioned Menards, you're down there, they say, here's the pencil, here's the paper, here's the box. If you're willing to spend a minute of your time and give us your contact information, we will enter you for new windows or whatever the deal may be. So, but if you're going to be consistent, if you're going to fault that, then in my mind, you'd also have to fault the other.
Well, I just think you need to consider, too, the intent in your heart.
Yeah.
Certain things would cause you to sin.
Yeah. And there again, when you go back and you think about Don, in the school raffle ticket, I don't know that most people, when they're asked for a dollar, are thinking, for me, this, I hope I win. It's just a buck to help the school. Now, again, that doesn't make it right. But we want to make sure that we put things in the right perspective. And I'm not going to put that in the same perspective as somebody who spends a buck thinking they're going to win $100,000 from the state. So, but I do think, too, that the conscience becomes more and more sensitive as the years go by. And people do start to eliminate some things that they might have done or did do in the younger years. In those situations, you could just write a check. You could take the money and turn around and say that you won $100 and write a check to the school.
I don't remember now what they were taking the money for, what they were donating it for, or anything. I wouldn't say that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the old joke. There was a preacher that decided that he was going to call in sick one Sunday, went out and played golf. Got a hole-in-one that was just unbelievable, and he thought, now who do I tell? So it can be kind of the same deal. I won. Now, what do I do with the money? Todd?
What if Virginia would have took it and bought lunch for everybody?
Again, you have the money there, so if you accept it, you're going to have to do something with it. But, you do get in that position where you're going to have to make a decision on how to spend it if you do receive it.
It wasn't a lot of money. I don't know how much it was to get to bottom.
So, okay. Bonnie?
I remember years ago, Jonathan will be 43 next month, and he was playing Little League, and they were having a raffle, and I didn't think anything bought it, bought raffle tickets. I won a half a beef. I was so happy. I can still not forget about that. He was probably 8, 9 years old, and it still haunts me to that day that I bought that $5 raffle ticket and won a half a beef.
Oh.
But I didn't think anything of it. That I do now.
Yeah. Well, again, as I said, the conscience becomes more sensitive, and hopefully people can at least start out with the big picture. There's some things that are definitely contrary to the scriptures, and then, the Bible talks about, for example, I think it's in 2 Corinthians 3, where Paul talks about being transformed glory into glory. And that's the idea that we're talking about in class. As the years go by, you become a better and better Christian. More and more rough edges are sanded off. And it takes a little while for people to start kind of plugging these things in. But little by little, you should end up with a point. And I think that's, too, where you find when you look, for example, at the qualifications for elders. Here you've got a guy. Maybe in those early years, he had a lot of those rough edges. But, he's shaved and he's honed and he's trimmed and he's pruned. And he's still not a perfect man. But he's been able to get to a point spiritually where he says, I've kind of thought through these things. I've changed my life to now where you know, I've kind of got this stuff down pat. And sometimes we can have expectations of people that they've got all that stuff figured out within the first couple years of Christianity. And maybe there's some people who do, but generally, at least from what I see, I don't know, maybe you've been around for a while too, it takes a little while to get them to that point. It does. Okay.
Just one comment. I'll finish. I think we have to be careful. I concern myself, be careful about letting somebody else define myself in the gray areas that are not, you know, that you have to go with circumstantial evidence to say that, oh, yeah, you're a sinner.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like the Bereans, you have to study to make sure
right.
that what you say is right. Because Paul said, you know, some that eat certain meats is a sin. Other people don't believe it. If you believe it's a sin, it's a sin.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I say when you start looking at things that we discussed earlier, it's a violation of the golden rule. I want Steve to lose. I want him to invest. You know, buy as many tickets as you can to just ratchet up the jackpot, and then I want you to lose your money. Well, I don't think anybody can look at that and say that that's consistent with the Christian faith. And if we can start with those broader things and teach people, then they can go ahead and you are going to get to some individual decisions there as far as how you're going to do things. And like I say, Jeff, you know, you might have a person conscientiously who says it's only, you know, it's less than 50 cents for the stamp, but I mean, that's still money that I'm investing and I'm opposed to it. And you are going to see some individual distinctions like that, but on the kinds of things that we talked about today, we should be able to have clarity. All right. Any other moral sins that you can think of?
Mentioned the drunkenness, I think is a lot of people today are okay with that.
Yeah.
Because they're going to go out and get drunk. They're going to go out and drink. I should put it better that way. Drinking in itself, even if they're not hunting, but they don't get drunk, it can still be a moral sin.
It is, and it's become such a problem. Now, if you roll through Taco Bell or some other places, they talk about happy hour.
Right.
Now, I don't think Taco Bell has tequila or anything that would fall into the booze category, but still, people have been conditioned when it comes to drinking that it's such a big part of our society that even fast food places will now, under the guise of drinking, advertise some of their products. We've got happy hour, you know, drinks or sale during this particular time. So it is a huge issue in our time. Anybody else? Yeah. And there again, you find there this kind of thing that we were talking about earlier. Right. People would say, well, drunkenness is wrong, but the recreational, I'm not sure, that was you that used that word, I guess. The recreational drinking is okay. After about 30 years of full-time work, I've come to the conclusion that very few people, if you sit down and talk to them about social drinking, they're just going to instantly give it up. Now, you can try, and I'm certainly willing to do that, but I do think maybe a more effective approach, and it's longer term, is that you start out with the big, and again, you start pruning. And you know, that's what Jesus did with the apostles. These fellows, they had some rough edges. And Jesus begins to trim and cut and take away. And, you know, even when they first started to serve as apostles, they still had some things that they needed to iron out. But little by little, and you end up with people who are really strong, people who are really committed. You know, it's no different than a job. You've got somebody that's working at a job for 30 years. You think he's going to be pretty proficient by the time that 30-year period is ended? Yeah. But you compare him 30 years to day one, what do you have? Light and different. Light and day. There's a huge difference between the two. Well, it's kind of the same thing with the Christian faith. And that's why, you know, Bible study, here, home, regular Bible reading, you know, we put out devotional material, all those things to help people start trimming off those rough edges. And then eventually, I think most will look at that and say, you know, I can get rid of this too. This is something that also needs to go. Anybody else? Tim?
I would say, like our government, but more like the state governments, because you got like Colorado and Michigan with marijuana, Indiana now with the gay marriages.
Yeah. There's just moral slackness. And in some cases, it's just almost a moral lapse where it's, you know, whatever you want to do morally, as long as you're not somehow hurting somebody else, then we're okay with it. So society is filled with these kinds of things. He says, John sums up all these as the works of the flesh. 1 John chapter 5, verse 17, Paul also talks about them in Galatians chapter 5. You have several other lists. Ephesians has various works of the flesh. You find them in Colossians 3, Romans chapter 1, a lot of different places where it's just that way of the world. And you may not be able to put a specific verse with everything, but, you know, it's kind of like truth and error. I mean, there are two ways, and they are radically different one from another. You also have some information when it comes to sin about sins of omission. And this is an area that everybody would also get nicked on. James, we remember the statement, therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it's sin. Have a lot of things, you know, that we could do. In part, you know, time doesn't permit us all the things to do, all the things that we might like to do, or all the things that we could do. But there are some times where a person says, I know I need to do this. And maybe it's something around the house. Maybe it's something that involves a relative. Maybe it's something that's related to the spiritual life. I know I need to do this. And for whatever reason, it just gets put off, put off, and put off. We're, if nothing else, at least bothered in the conscience by that. And, you know, the Bible says that we can commit sin in this particular area. So, on the one hand, there are things that God has forbidden. We do those things that God has prohibited. We sin. There are other times where there's some things that we should do, we fail to do, and once again, we're guilty of sin. The next paragraph, he says, still another type of sin is that disobedience to God, no moral principle is involved. Sometimes there are commands that God has given and we fail to observe them. You have the example of King Saul. He was told to go and, you know, terminate some folks. Who was he supposed to get rid of? The Amalekites. Well, did he do what God said? He failed to fully comply with God's will. So, as the writer says, he saved some of the animals to sacrifice. He spared the Amalekite king. And he, the writer says, violated no moral principle of which he'd been informed, but still he had been disobedient to God, and that was sin. We can do the same thing as Christians today. We've got, and we've used this illustration before, the elements for the Lord's Supper prescribed. We've talked about this extensively from Matthew 26. In our Wednesday night class, Jesus gave bread, used bread, which at the Passover time would have been unleavened bread. There was the fruit of the vine, a reference to a product from the grape. But I've never seen anybody try to substitute chicken or beef or pork at the Lord's table. But somebody might do that, or say, let's use some orange juice, or let's use you know, some of the kind of juice, and apple juice, something like that. Well, that's violating God's will, just as Saul did. Last paragraph on the page, the Bible does not teach that there are degrees of sin. Now, I think we want to make sure that we pause here for a second and understand what he's saying. Sin is sin. Would you say that there's any sense in which we might be able to grade sin or rate sin? Would you say that all sin is exactly equal, Brian?
As
greater. Right.
So that indicates to me that there is some sense of degrees. Mm-hmm. Not that we necessarily are the right ones to judge the degrees, but Jesus could.
Right. Let's think of it from the standpoint of our judicial system. Does our judicial system grade or rate crime?
Sure.
What would an example of that be?
Murder and stealing.
Oh, all right. We've got theft. You might have misdemeanor. If you go down to Walgreens and you steal a tube of chapstick, you know, they're not going to count that the same as going into a bank with a gun and saying, okay, you know, I want $1 million. We would say, okay, both are theft, but they're not equal. Murder is the same thing. There's first degree murder. You know, you've got felony murder. You've got premeditated murder. You've got manslaughter, all kinds of things. All are crimes. All can come with a punishment. And in the Bible, you have the same kind of thing. John 19:11 would be one example. Another one, I think, and we've used this at various times as well, adultery. Remember what Jesus said in Matthew 5? If a man looks at a woman to lust after, he's committed adultery with her. Where? In his heart. But if there's the actual act, then it's not. It still could be a heart issue, but now you've got something else. And I don't know that anybody would say that a lustful look is going to be the same. Now, morally, it would be equivalent. But we would say that there's going to be a difference between those two acts. One is looking and the other's doing. So when we talk about whether or not there are degrees of sin, be careful in the language here and make sure that you really kind of have a good grasp of what was just covered. He says it does not condone little white lies while denouncing big black lies. And a lot of people think in these terms. It does teach all liars will have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, Revelation 21:8. Well, that's right, because we don't need, if you will, a big sin to condemn us. You also have, as we think about sin, some physical consequences. And those physical consequences may be worse than others. Such is also true when we think about our criminal code. But from the standpoint of the sinner, when we think about hate, that's going to cost him his soul, his eternal spirit, just as much as a murderer will have to pay for his. John said, whosoever hates his brother is a murderer. And you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. Then we have some consequences of sin. If you look at the consequences of sin, here are some that are not in the sheet. Do you think that one possible consequence of sin is shame? Shame. All right, I think that's true. Can you think of some Bible examples where that would be true?
David.
All right, you think about David, Bathsheba. He was torn up over that. That would be one. Where else? Shame.
Judas.
All right, you think about Judas. Again, who have you betrayed? This fellow that you've been with, the fellow who's been kind to you, the fellow who's done all these mighty works. There had to be some shame there. Anybody else? All right. I think when you go back and you look at his life, I was a blasphemer, a persecutor, and an injurious man, 1 Timothy 1:12-15, he had some shame.
Peter.
All right. Peter, too. After he denied the Lord the third time and remembered what Jesus had told him, absolutely. There's still another one hanging around there that we should get.
Abraham.
All right. Yeah.
Eli said his wife was his sister.
Yeah. King says, look, you know, you didn't tell me the truth about her. You had to have shame there.
Jacob.
All right. Again, find the stuff in his tent, and he's kind of called out before the people of Israel. Had to be some shame there.
Adam and Eve.
Oh, finally. I was hoping somebody would get that one. Adam and Eve. How do we know they were shamed? Genesis 3:7. All right. They decided to go out and try to get some fig leaves and conceal themselves, cover themselves. What about guilt? Is that a consequence? You can go back and look at David and probably, you know, all of the people that we looked at thus far, but Adam and Eve are also there. What about fear? Shame, guilt, fear when it comes to sin. All right, fear of consequences. What about the person at night committed a crime or done something else bad? What's he doing? You know, looking over his shoulder. In the car, what's he doing? Yeah, looking in the rearview mirror to see, did my speeding cause the police officer to catch me? So those are some pretty terrible consequences of sin, but they're not the only ones. We find that sin can have some very undesirable consequences, not only when we look at the physical realm, but also the spiritual realm. And then, too, when we think about a consequence of sin, you know, it's one thing if we go back to the illustration of speeding. It's one thing to do that, you know, maybe once every 5 or 10 years. But when it comes to sin, do you think there are some people who are involved with it as far as a way of life? It's just the way that they live. Day in and day out, it's sin. And that kind of consequence of sin, what's it do to you? Let's use another of the illustrations that we talked about earlier. The drugs. The gambling. The alcohol. What's the consequence there? Well, it gets a hold of you and it destroys your life. It's like your God. It just puts you in a prison. And it's very, very difficult to break free of it. If you become involved with that kind of way of life, you lose the light, you lose fellowship with God. Joy is something that's stripped from you, righteousness, and also assurance. And we don't have time to look at those passages. Let's think about the consequences of sin from the standpoint of the lesson. He says, in forbidding Adam to eat the fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, God said, in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. Genesis 2:17. When Adam sinned, he did die. He died physically as well as spiritually. Not literally on that day, physical death, but that put physical death in motion. As a result of his transgression that day, Adam died physically many years later, and his posterity has been subject to physical death since that time, and that is right. Of even greater importance is the fact that Adam died spiritually on that day. Spiritual death is that separation from God. God says we were in fellowship, and now that fellowship has been broken. All spiritual death is the result of sin. Romans 6:23, Paul said, the wages of death is, or was it, for the wages of sin is death. I got up on the wrong side of the bed this morning. Again, for if you live after the flesh, you shall die, but if ye through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, you'll live. Romans 8:13, we've got a choice when it comes to sin. He says, citing Ephesians 2:1, and you hath he quickened or made alive who were dead in trespasses and sins. Colossians 2:13, similar. And you being dead in your sins, hath he quickened together with him, having forgiven all your trespasses. So we need that new life, 2 Corinthians 5:17. We need to be made alive in Christ so we can be freed, released, and separated from our sins. Otherwise, we're going to face that lake of fire and brimstone. He asks the question, is sin inherited? If we have this problem of sin, it makes sense to ask when we pick it up. Do we start out in life with it? Do we pick it up before we're born? Or do we pick it up sometime in adulthood? There are some people, and you'll find variations of this, but there are some people who think that we inherit sin from Adam. It obviously was something that he and Eve committed, and that it's just transmitted, just as, you know, hair color, is going to come through genes. Not to say that sin is in our genes, but they would say that this is something that we pick up because it's just an inherited thing. You have passages which say that that's not true. Romans 14, verse 12 says, so then every one of us shall give an account of himself to God. Not our ancestors on our behalf, but we're going to do that. It's according to what we've done in the body. 2 Corinthians 5, 10, not because of Adam and Eve or our parents or anybody else. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. We are the ones who commit sin. It's not inherited. You have Joshua, back there in Joshua 24, verse 15. Remember, he said, choose you this day. You get to make a choice. Do you want to follow sin, or do you want to follow God? And we make that choice, and eventually, as we get old enough, we decide that we're going to choose God. Acts 7:51 will be another passage. So one of the more helpful verses there, if you kind of want a simple summary verse, would be from the book of Ezekiel, chapter 18, verse 20. Ezekiel said, the soul that sins, it shall die. The father and the mother, they're not going to be involved in the process as far as transmitting sin. All right, skipping the paragraph in bold, he says, if babies were born sinners, and this is also a very helpful passage, but coming from the new, Ezekiel 18 and also Matthew 18. The Lord said, unless you become like, all right, those children, those little children, you shall not be able to do what? Inherit the, you got to be like a little child. Well, if it's true that little children inherit sin, and the view is right that those little children are basically condemned, then what would be true for Jesus' statement there? You've got to be what to enter heaven? You've got to become an evil, wicked sinner. But that can't be right. The Lord meant you've got to become righteous, pure. He was pronouncing the goodness, the wholesomeness of kids, and that's an excellent verse in conjunction with Ezekiel chapter 18. All right, we are the offspring of God. Acts 17:29. So our spirits cannot be defiled prior to the time that we do it, that we're guilty of sin. Then, next paragraph on the last page, what then do we inherit from our physical parents? We inherit the ability to know good and evil, and also the human weakness, which in times causes us to sin. We do not inherit the guilt of Adam's transgression. Never have and never will. Seek and ye shall find. Let's figure out which the right letters are. Transgression of God's law is? It's going to be sin. C. The wages of sin is? B. Death. All liars will have their part in? A. The lake of fire and brimstone. King Saul was told to utterly destroy the Egyptians, Amalekites, or the Philistines. B. Amalekites. Thank you. God told Adam and Eve that in the day they ate of the tree of good knowledge, they would? Going to die. True or false? The son shall bear the iniquity or the sin of the father. False. Sin is not inherited. It's not transmitted by parents or Adam or anybody else. Every one of us shall give an account of himself to God, Romans 14:12. True. Number three, each person will receive the things which others have done. False. It's what we do in our bodies. We are the offspring of God. True, Acts 17:29. Except we be converted to become as little children, we cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. That's true, Matthew 18:3. All right, then our numbers. And you hath he quickened. Four. And you being dead in your sins and uncircumcision of your flesh. Five. Therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it's sin. 1 James 4:17. For if ye live after the flesh, ye will die. 2 Romans 8:13. For all have sinned and fall short of God's glory. There is none righteous, no, not one. Romans 3:10. All right, how many times do we find blasphemy in Galatians 5, Romans 1, Colossians 3? Once. Deceit is mentioned once. Fornication is mentioned three times. Murder is mentioned twice, as is uncleanness. Adultery, once. Lasciviousness, once. Strife, once. Covetousness, twice. Drunkenness, one.